Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and Friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Professor Sharon Megdal, Director of the University of Arizona Water Resources Center, and one of the world's experts on dry lands water usage, discussing water issues and cooperation in the Middle East, including Israel, Jordan, and the Palestinian Authority.
We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our friend, Professor Sharon Megdal. She's the Director of the Water Resources Center at the University of Arizona and one of the world's experts on, dry land, irrigation, water issues. What's the best way to describe your expertise?
Water management in water-scarce regions, I would say.
Well, one of those regions, of course, is Arizona, but another is Israel and really the whole Middle East. And you have done a great deal of work in Israel and in comparing and in sort of analyzing the water issues and the ways that water is managed and shared. And, cooperation in the Middle East is always a difficult thing to achieve. This might be one of the success stories.
Well, there are a lot of success stories, even where there remain challenges. And the technology that Israel has developed and implemented in terms of desalination of seawater and also agricultural irrigation are technologies used around the world as well as regionally there. And so we have some excellent success stories, but we also have challenges because these issues of water scarcity in an era of climate change and growing populations they're challenging issues, and they require a lot of attention and a lot of cooperation among many different parties.
So that's always true. It's true in Arizona where, people squabble about water usage, but in an area in which, say, the Palestinians in the West Bank, Gaza, Jordan, and Syria are the other major players with Israel, I guess Lebanon to a degree, that has to be infinitely more complicated, doesn't it?
It is complicated. And in a way, a lot of my work really has been built upon the similarities of our region where we live in Tucson, Arizona, in the Colorado River Basin, and that region. And if you take a look at the Jordan River, you do have five different geopolitical entities utilizing that river water. And the Bible speaks about the mighty Jordan River, yet it's a trickle in not very good shape quality-wise that feeds to the Dead Sea. So when you think about iconic river bodies, whether it's the Lower Jordan River, the Dead Sea, they're very much impacted by the water use of multiple entities, and they're affected by natural conditions of drought and climate change, human-caused conditions like disposal of inadequately treated wastewater. All these things figure in and affect the water supplies that people rely on for multiple purposes and nature relies on.
I remember that song we used to sing in choir, "The Jordan River is deep and wide." It is neither. We'll talk some more about the Jordan, the Dead Sea, water usage, desalination, all of that with Professor Sharon Megdal. We come back in a moment here on Two Jewish. We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Professor Sharon Megdal is a good friend. We just said earlier, I definitely didn't want to call her an old friend. It makes me sound old. It makes you sound old. Definitely not doing that. She is one of the world's experts on dry lands water usage. She's director of the Water Resources Center at the University of Arizona. We started speaking about Israel. Of course, many similarities in dry lands water usage anywhere in the world. We started talking about the Jordan River. The Jordan River is, although when you raft on it and there isn't enough water to float a raft a lot of times, it makes you wonder, how could that possibly be a major source of water for the region? And yet it is. Can you explore some of the challenges there?
Well, yes, you do have countries relying on the upper Jordan, which feeds into the Sea of Galilee, the Kinneret. That's the largest lake in that part of the world, and that the inflows into the Sea of Galilee have diminished over time as the Upper Jordan River, riparian countries, Lebanon, Syria, Jordan also uses it, Israel, and then you have in the lower Jordan River area, the Palestinians utilizing that water. The supplies have been diminished over time due to climate change and the areas experiencing increasing temperatures, sometimes changing and diminished precipitation patterns. So you've got the Sea of Galilee that's experienced some of the lowest inflow in the last 100 years, just in the last few years. That water is then used by both Israel and supplied to Jordan through the peace treaty. And then what isn't used flows down into the lower Jordan, and then that's used yet again, and then that is what flows into the Dead Sea. And you've got growing areas. One of the things I think about every time I'm in the region is just look at the number of people there, and they're all relying on pretty much the same natural sources of water that were there. And so more being taken out, and that's why you've got the whole effort to increase the utilization of recycled water, particularly by agriculture, and then manufactured water, if that's what you'd like to call desalinated seawater. You've got more people, more activity, more demand, and diminished supply. So that brings about stresses on the natural water system.
The Jordan, with all, is still under great strain. There were some interesting stories about the fact that Kinneret at the Sea of Galilee seems to be returning to a better base level. For a while, it just was sort of disappearing. Can you address that a little bit?
Well, there's been a focus on the need for water for nature. In fact, over a decade ago, the Israeli Kinneret, and the law was changed to recognize that nature needs water and that all water should not be just used for human needs. At the same time, there was a concerted effort to increase the level of treatment of waste flows so that the water flowing into the Jordan River would be a better quality. So between the improvements of the inflows and the water quality, at the same time, there's been an effort to increase the flow into the Jordan River. I would say that some of the environmental community would say nowhere near enough, but getting more is better. And so there has been an improvement in the water quality, and I can't speak so much to the flows of the lower Jordan because I haven't looked at the actual flows over time, but when I visited it, you know, it's not a mighty river, but it's there still, and it is supporting some of the nature along the way.
Many of us have gone to Israel, floated in the Dead Sea, and have seen the Dead Sea shrink and shrink and shrink. There have been a variety of plans floated and even some maybe pipelines started. Tell us what the status of the Dead Sea is right now in terms of water usage or in terms of restoring it, perhaps.
The Dead Sea is an interesting body of water, and when I give lectures about the region, I sometimes show a graphic that shows how it has shrunk. And it used to be basically one body of water that extended fairly far to the south, where the water is used for potash processing. And over time, it's shrunk so much that there are two water bodies now. One is the what I call the real Dead Sea, the part to the north. And then the part to the south where there's water is really water that's taken from the real Dead Sea, the northern part, conveyed south, and then used for evaporation for potash processing. And so we have industrial demands on the Dead Sea that are actually taking water from that shrunken Dead Sea and transporting it down. At the same time, the sea is shrinking because of less inflow and the like. Now, one of the proposed solutions, or partial solutions, this is an example of a wicked water problem where you can't just say, here is the solution to the problem and go implement it. But something that was examined by the World Bank several years ago was some large-scale desalination of water from the Red Sea with the brine, the byproduct water that can't be used, being pumped into the Dead Sea to increase the quantity of water in the Dead Sea. And in fact, there is a pilot effort that's been underway for some time. I think it's gotten to the point of accepting some bids for construction to build a desalination plant in the Aqaba region, the Jordan side of the Dead Sea, and produce some water that can be used in the south of Jordan, sold to Israel for the south of Israel and the Arava and Eilat region. And then there would be a pumped water into the Dead Sea. At the same time, Israel would provide more water from the north to Amman and the northern part of Jordan. So that's an example of where Jordan and Israel and also the Palestinian territories came together, I believe, in 2013 to enter into an agreement for this Red Sea-Dead Sea project. But it also has faced some challenge due to geopolitical issues and delays, and will likely be built, but exactly how the water will be allocated, I think, is still subject to determination. I would add that I think now that Israel has a government in place, after a period of time without it, maybe some budget decisions will be made that could help that project move forward. I heard that it was stalled because of inability to get some budgetary decisions made by Israel.
It would be great to see the Dead Sea kind of beginning to move back the other direction. You know, it's always so strange to go there and see these hotels which are built on the shore that are now, you know, 300 feet or hundreds of yards away from the water itself.
Right, and that water by those hotels that you're referring to on the Israel side is actually kind of that water used for processing the potash. The some of those beaches up on the northern part where there weren't the hotels, at least I think Mineral Beach has been closed, one that I visited I think in 2012 because of problems of sinkholes and just it being unsafe.
Right. In providing water, one of the, I mean, it's obviously challenging dealing with people who don't believe you have a right to exist, or that dealing with people that you feel are colonizing you. And yet there has been a fair amount of water cooperation in the region. Where does the water, say, for people living in Gaza come from now?
Well, the Gaza situation is really a challenging one because they're relying on very limited groundwater. There are issues of saline intrusion, and there's simply inadequate water supply in the area. And so there has been discussion of future desalination plant and that being an important source of water going forward. But the Gaza is very water stressed right now. It's different from the situation where you have more, let's say, connected infrastructure and potential for connected infrastructure, such as in the West Bank. But there, too, the geopolitical issues loom large, not only in terms of the potable water delivery, but also treatment of wastewater. The East Jerusalem wastewater treatment situation has been pending for some time, and there are issues of, you know, who controls the water, who controls the wastewater and its use. And these are tied up into geopolitical issues. On the technical side, they're immensely resolvable through treatment technologies and collection systems for wastewater. But often it's these other issues that affect the ability to work towards solutions, let's say on a time frame that we would all like to see.
We talk often, people in the water field talk about the efficiency of the use of water. America is not exactly legendary in this area. What is the efficiency like in terms of the use of water and recycling water and so on in Israel right now?
The efficiency there is very high. The reuse of treated wastewater from the Tel Aviv region Israel's renowned for the high level of utilization for agriculture in the northern Negev and other more decentralized wastewater treatment plants, not the big one in the Shafdan in Tel Aviv, are supplying water for agriculture. The agricultural water use is very efficient through drip, pressurized spray, not the kind of flood irrigation that we still see utilized a lot here in the United States, although some of that is more efficient than people think it is, but that's not what we're talking about this morning. So the agricultural water efficiency is well known and respected worldwide. We also have to look at the residential side, and the delivery system for water in Israel has a very low leakage rate. So you don't have water leaked like you might have in some of the older systems right here in the United States. I do have to say here in Tucson, we have a very good system for capturing losses and measuring losses. But you look at older places like Philadelphia, for example, they've historically had large loss rates where water isn't even getting to the homes because it's lost between the treatment plant and the properties. In Israel, you have a very efficient municipal system for delivery, and you also have a very, very high level of just water consciousness and conservation ethic of consumers where water's just not wasted. And fortunately, we have that here in Tucson most of the time, but I still shudder sometimes when I see water being wasted, you know, as I'm driving around town and so forth. But the conservation ethic, the efficiency of water use are both very, very high in Israel.
Desalination, I just want to talk about it briefly because it's become a big part of Israel's mix of water supplies. Are there problems with that desalination? Is it, generally speaking, a really positive thing? Can you address a little bit?
The assessment of desalination to meet drinking water needs, or let's just say good quality water provision, is accepted in many areas. There are two major things that come up whenever you talk about desalination. One is the energy carbon footprint associated with it, because a lot of energy is needed to push the water through the membranes, and then the disposal of the brine, the byproduct. So, for example, in an ocean water desalination plant, typically for a quantity of water you push through the membranes, about half of it comes out as good water, and then the other half has to be disposed, and it's highly concentrated saline water. And so there are always questions about what are the implications of that brine disposal. Experts believe that the dissolution, the dissipation of it when it goes back out to the sea, pushed out a ways, is the solution is that dissolving or dissolution of the water. That's not the same situation when you talk about inland desalination of what's considered brackish, salty water. Sometimes that's done through evaporation ponds. The great advantage that Israel does have is it's got the Mediterranean Sea. And because of that, it has a ready source of water for desalination. It's built 5 large-scale desalinations and is working on the 6th. And I think the plan showed the 7th. And so the numbers say that in not that long a period of time, about 85% of potable drinking water needs will come from desalinated seawater. The two issues of the carbon footprint can sometimes be dealt with through using different sources of energy and offset and the like. And the brine disposal thus far, people are seeing as okay when you're discharging it to the ocean. But these are things that are studied and watched, and fortunately they've got an ocean or sea there. We in our region do not, and so we look here in our region to possible partnerships with Mexico or this brackish water desalination to make use of the desalination technology to help our water situation here. But it is a very important part of the water solution set, although not everybody's a big fan.
I want to thank Professor Sharon Migdal for a great visit here on Too Jewish. Where can people go to find out more about your work and Drylands Water?
I'd suggest they start by going to the Water Resources Research Center's website, which is wrrc.arizona.edu. And I'm always glad to talk about this anytime, so I look forward to the next time.
We will get you back. Thanks so much, Sharon. Be well.
Thank you. Bye-bye.